Welcome to the Religious Studies Project, hosted by Christopher Cotter and myself, David Robertson. This podcast is produced in association with the British Association for the Study of Religions, and you can visit our website at www.religiousstudiesproject.com. Today we're joined by Associate Research Professor Ariella Kesar of Trinity College, Hartford, Connecticut. She is the Associate Director of the Institute for the Study of Secularism in Society and Culture, and has been heavily involved in a huge number of large quantitative surveys relating to religion and other issues, particularly the American Religious Identification Survey. And today, we're recording this interview in Canterbury at an international symposium entitled What Does It Mean to Believe? And Professor Kesar presented a paper on what does belief mean to Americans? And we thought that this paper would be a perfect introduction to this topic for the podcast audience, and also give a good flavour of what quantitative research is, what qualitative research is, and how we can maybe produce a more integrated approach to the study of religion. So, Professor Kesar, first of all, welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining us. Before we get started, can we just give an overview of what we're going to be talking about here? What does belief mean to Americans?
Well, you know, it's part of the symposium. My presentation will focus on the American society, contemporary American society. And there is an overall perception that America is a nation of believers. And what I'll try to walk you through, actually through listening, to the recent data based on very, very large surveys of American adults, and to show what kind of the empirical evidence for these kind of perceptions in the research community, and try to really dissect this kind of notion of a nation of believers.
Yeah, thanks for that overview. And yes, what does belief mean to Americans?
For both secular and religious people, it is a compass that directs their lives. For many, God is at the center of the belief, of their belief, but not for all. When we recently asked college students to define belief, a young atheist answered, "What you believe really defines like who you are and what you do." So this is really the starting point. And when I put together and try to get an overview of the what's the research goal of this topic or this presentation, what does belief mean to Americans? The main goal is to show, to talk about patterns of belief, and to show how these patterns vary widely by religious groups and by those who profess a religion and those who do not. Then there are also variations in belief which stem from cultural differences, age, and educational attainment, and very, very often what we documented in the American society and in other cultures, there are large differences between men and women.
Mm. So when people say that America is a Christian nation or a very religious nation, or things are much more complicated than that.
By far, more complicated, and there are large gaps. And we're going to talk about these gaps. And the research design, as you heard, tried to use both qualitative and quantitative data. The main kind of empirical evidence is based on quantitative data. And that you heard about the American Religious Identification Survey. It's a series of surveys. In fact, the largest surveys of American religion since 1990, which represent the U.S. adult population. It's a national surveys based on telephone. In 1990, we interviewed over 113,000 adults in the 48 states. In 2001, we interviewed over 50,000 adults. And in 2008, about 54,000 adults. So if you put them all together, 1990, 2001, and 2008, we have over 200,000 adult respondents that were asked that open-ended question. What is your religion, if any? In fact, in 1990, to be precise, the question was, what is your religion? In 2001 and 2008, we added the clause, if any. So what is your religion, if any? So what is unique about this approach? This open-ended question does not provide the respondents, the people who talked to the survey on the phone, we don't provide a list, kind of a closed list of choices, of categories. But we ask them to choose on their own, in their own words, their religious identification. So you realize that we have a large number of categories, all these variations that people describe themselves. In fact, we call it self-identification. We have over 100 categories, from large groups to very, very small groups. And the fact that we have such large samples, and national samples, we can really represent the very, very, very small groups. And in fact, since in the United States, the U.S. Census cannot collect data on religion, on religious identification, the ARISEERS have become kind of the official data. And since 2003, every year, the statistical abstract use ARIS data to show or present tables of the religious identifications in the United States. If you go to the U.S. Statistical Abstract, you see those figures for the long, long list of religious groups. Since we're using the same, replicating the same methodology, we're the only series that shows the trend, what has remained the same, what has changed over time from 1990 to 2008. The ARIS data has been used in the statistical abstract, showing the trend, what has changed over time from 1990 to 2008. What we do here in what does belief mean to Americans is trying to deepen the understanding of Americans' worldviews, and we supplement these national statistics from the ARIS series with some qualitative data. So the ARIS data provide the quantitative statistics, and we add some qualitative data. A group of American college students were asked to elaborate on their belief or disbelief and tell some personal stories, and documenting their individual journeys provide a great opportunity to better understand the complexities and spectrum of belief.
So just for the listeners who've maybe not even heard these words, quantitative and qualitative, although they're obviously going to be getting an understanding of that through what you're talking, do you just want to say really quickly what quantitative and qualitative mean?
Well, when we do quantitative analysis, we want to provide statistics, a lot of data. We look in patterns, and we look at the general trends, we look at some averages, we look at distributions according to different demographics, could be, and how we'll present here some differences between religious groups, so how in this case patterns of beliefs differ by religious groups, so we get numbers, so each group has an average. And again, we're talking about distributions. When we look at qualitative, we have more the stories, some verbatim, some insights of people's experiences. So rather than numbers, we have some anecdotes or personal stories. So that's the main differences. And usually the qualitative data are based on smaller number of people, and you cannot project from these personal stories. I mean, they have to be coherent, you know, and when we put them both together, it provides the narratives, the explanations of the general overall patterns that the statistical empirical data show us.
And so your work's quite unique in a way, and you're trying to bring in both aspects at the same time.
Indeed. These kind of what we call the integrated design is quite unique, and we hope that more and more researchers are going to go in that direction and really give us the full spectrum. So let's start and look at patterns of belief. And in the ARIS in 2001, we had a subsample beyond the open-ended religious question that was asked of 54,000. We had subsample, large subsample, of over 17,000 adults that were asked on their outlook and beliefs. And what we found in general, that 80% of Americans, when they were asked, do you agree with the proposition God exists? 80% agree strongly. But what's very important is that these expressions of belief vary widely by religious group. And I'm going to try to tell you and describe to you what hopefully we'll kind of use some links to some charts, and you'll see the kind of patterns. And the one explanation to these pretty large gaps between religious groups is that different faiths have different teachings on a wide spectrum of issues, including the nature of God. The concept of higher power differs by religious group. They don't believe in the same higher powers, and there's not a lot of consensus. So we really have to take that in mind. So what do we mean, these large gaps? And bear with me. Out of those 100 or so categories, what we look at, and hopefully you'll have a chance to see these charts, we look at over 20 groups. And the group that shows the lowest agreement with the God exists proposition are Buddhists. Less than 40% say that they agree strongly that God exists. Go to the other extreme are the evangelical born-again Christians with 98%. Mm-hmm. So look at this large, large gap. And that's really, really from less than 40% to 98%. People who profess no religion, I mean, not surprisingly, are at about 45%. Seventh-day Adventists are at about 97%. Jehovah's Witness, 96%. Baptists are at 93%. Catholic, the largest groups in the United States, are at about 83%. Jewish at 53-54%. So you see the spectrum. So we have this clustering of groups that show low kind of rather low belief in the existence of God versus the Pentecostal, the evangelical, that are almost universally identify or show strong belief.
Yeah, and this is just fascinating because a lot of people would think that religion in general is just about belief in God. Well, there we've got our Buddhists, prime example, very low belief in God, and also people who think that people who aren't religious don't believe in God, but there's still a significant amount of them that do. And I'd also be really interested in knowing about those 2% of evangelical Christians who don't believe in God as well. So there's variation.
Yeah, although I think most statisticians will tell you if you show them 100%, something is wrong. So
yeah.
there are always variations. There are always variations, and that actually is a good indication of the robustness of the data.
Yeah.
Just to illustrate and to explain these perceptions, one American Jewish college students explained, "I believe it is possible to feel like a real Jew and not believe in God. There are so many of us out there, and we haven't been kicked out of our synagogue yet." So the idea here that college students are an intriguing group of young adults. They are at a turning point of their lives. They live independently from their parents, mingling with new peers, exposed to new ideas. Most of them have not formed yet their own family unit. But as they build an independent identity, some distance themselves from their family and upbringing and search for new meanings. Others imitate the familiar practices and belief they grew up with. So they are really a great group of people that are open and are in search. They are the one who use their very high-tech savvy that reduce social networks and the internet to keep on searching and finding some meanings to and answers to the questions that they're looking for. So let's go and look at another questions about people's beliefs. And here we wanted to, and we're going back to the national data, to the ARIS data, and we look at belief in God's interventions. And we asked people if they believe about the ability of the divine to intervene in the world and perform miracles. And this question was asked only of people who agree that God exists. Didn't make sense to ask of people who didn't agree that God exists. So those who said yes, that they agree strongly or somewhat, were asked if they agree with the proposition God performs miracle. And again, we found sizable differences between religious groups. Clearly, different religions conceive miracles differently. Again, Jews are at the lowest point. They're the most skeptical. Only 32% agree strongly that God performs miracles, Buddhist, very similarly, with lowest agreement. And at the top, with again, 98% are Assemblies of God, followed by Evangelical, Born Again, and the Seventh-day Adventist, and Pentecostal, at over 95%, who said that they agree strongly that God performs miracles. To again, the narratives that people tell, kind of their explanations, help us understand the meaning and fluidity of their beliefs. Here's again some words of a Jewish college student. I find that my view on religion, on God, and spirituality in general is changing almost daily. So that's very interesting. So different experiences, different time of their lives, they perceive and their beliefs keeps on changing. There was another question that we wanted to ask about people's belief, and we went beyond the kind of overall intervention of God. We want to see if they believe that God directly assists them. So in all, 71% of Americans, adult American, agree strongly that God helps them. Again, we ask them, do you agree or disagree with the proposition, God helps me? But again, as we saw before, with the existence of God, with performs miracles, there are large gaps between religious groups. Almost all Seventh-day Adventists and Evangelical born again strongly believe that God helps them. In contrast, only 25% of Buddhists and 1/3 of Jews and people who say they have no religion strongly believe that God helps them. In 2008, in the ARIS 2008, we asked what we call the God question differently. We tried to refine the question to try to distinguish between believers and non-believers, but also between people who are atheist in their viewpoints and agnostics, between deists and theists. And we asked the question differently. So it was asked regarding the existence of God.
Okay.
There is no such thing, so it's kind of the atheist point of view. Overall, only 2% of the adult population say that there's no such thing. With kind of the agnostic point of view, there are two ways that we kind of sliced the kind of the answer or looked at the answer. There's no way to know. That's what we call the hard agnostics, about 4% of the adult population, or those who say, I'm not sure.
So we
label them as soft agnostic. That's 6%. So 4 and 6, we have 10% overall of the adult population that told us that they're not sure or there's no way to know. It's kind of 10%. What we call them agnostics. 12% say that there is a higher power but no personal God. 12% of the adult population are what we call the deist. They believe in a higher power, but not in a personal God. And the bulk of the American adults, 70%, are what we call theist. They're kind of firm believers. They say that there is definitely a personal God. These patterns are quite different if we look at the slice of this American pie and we focus on these segment of the American population, which has grown dramatically since 1990, the nones, N-O-N-E-S, people who profess no religion, quite a large group in American population that grew from 8% in 1990 to 15% in 2008, which is about 34 million adults. That's a pretty large segment of the American population.
And doubled in just 20 years.
Absolutely, absolutely. And in actually, numerically, it's more than doubled. So if we look at their patterns when we ask them this God question in 2008, it's quite different. The patterns, which, first of all, something that we have to understand, these nuns who distance themselves from organized religion. Mm-hmm. When you ask them that, self-identification, what is your religion, if any, they say nothing. They say, I have no religion. Some are the atheists by identification. Some are the agnostics or the secular. But when we specifically ask about their belief about God, 27% are actually what we call provide theists belief. They said that there is definitely a personal God. So 27%, that's not a large number. And in fact, only 7% said that there is no such thing. So by their belief, about 7% kind of provide like atheist belief. Mm-hmm. So that's why we look at, when we try to estimate, give an idea of the size of the atheist population, we always have to make the distinction between atheists by identification, which is only about 1% of the adult population, but if we look at atheists by belief, that's about 7% of the population.
Because it's quite a negative identity in a way. You're saying I'm not a believer. It's not.
It's still a stereotype. It's a negative stereotype in the American population. People are less forthcoming to declare themselves as atheists. But when you really ask them specifically about their belief, they're much more. it's easier for them to opt for this answer. Yeah. And if we look at what we call the hard and the soft agnostic, that's a large group. That's altogether 35% of the nones, N-O-N-E-S. When, again, if we go back to those college students, that kind of confusion is well articulated by one. Well, I don't think I can understand the universe. I wish I did. That would be swell. So, in the meantime, I just hope for the best. I guess I don't believe in God. I don't see myself resolving these issues anytime soon. Perhaps when I'm old, I'll have some time to put some serious study into it. But for now, I live my life and hope there is a meaning in that. So, I think that that's helpful to understand, although the confusion. Mm-hmm. There are two other issues I want to talk about that we looked at in 2008 to try to explore and understand people's beliefs and meanings. And we looked at quite interesting and very different issues. One, their beliefs or their attitude towards horoscope.
Okay.
Whether they think that horoscope can predict their future. And we also ask about their perception about human evolution. So, again, we ask these questions both the nuns and the
general population.
And the general population. What we found with the horoscope, that neither the nuns nor most American adults believe in the credibility of horoscope. Despite the visibility of horoscopes, only 17% say either maybe or yes when asked if horoscopes can predict the future. It is quite revealing that there is no difference between these two populations. This turns contrary to some claims that nuns, N-O-N-E-S, are uniquely receptive to New Age and spiritual beliefs. Mm. In contrast to belief in horoscopes, when it comes to belief in human evolution, American nuns are quite different from the general population, whereas only 17% of the general population definitely accepts human evolution. Mm. 33% of nuns do. The proportions that reject the concept of human evolution is outright the proportion that reject it outright are inverted, with 36% of the general American population saying that human definitely did not evolve from earlier species of animals, but only 17% of nuns. Human evolution, as you may know, has become a cultural wedge issue in the United States, stirring debates between scientists and creationists over school curricula. Mm. Going back to the college students' narratives, one student elaborates. There are many things that I believe. I think my beliefs probably conflicts with what certain religions believe. For example, I would believe in evolution, and I would believe that there are certain kinds of acts that are wrong, and I would include, for example, treating people badly, violence and slavery, saying that women have no life, that they don't have equal rights. So that would be a representation of me as a person, not me as an atheist. Mm-hmm. I just want to conclude again with one another little quote from one student who illustrates the complexity of belief. And one American student says, "Belief is really a hard thing to define. Sometimes, at this moment, I believe that induction works and think I can go from there." Thank you.
Well, thank you very much, Professor Keith. What you've done there is shown really intriguingly how we can take large surveys, which ask, they have to ask quite small questions because you're asking them to so many people, mm-hmm. But they can be constructed in a way that is consistent and allows longitudinal data, but then also with combining using similar questions in more qualitative settings where people get a chance to expand, you can really clarify what's coming out of the data when you're plotting it on all these charts and graphs and things. Just before we turn off the recorder, I was wondering if you could just tell people how they can access this information themselves. We're going to put a lot of links on the website to go with this podcast, so people will get the links there. But I just wondered if you could tell them what information they'll be able to access from that.
We have in the American Religious Identification Survey website the summary report that Professor Barry Cosman and myself put together. There are many tables with many statistics on all the religious groups that changes over time. We also show those figures by social demographics, so you'll see the tables for the males and females, for the different age groups, geography for every state, by ethnicity. There are plenty, yeah. plenty of data to look at. In addition, there are the NUNS report with additional very detailed information of what I've just talked about, where we also compared the NUNS to Americans in general, so that there are further information. I mean, there are fascinating questions that we ask about life cycle events that will be interesting when we compare the different groups. There are also the Latino report, where we looked further deep into the American Latinos. Very, very large group, fastest growing minority in the United States, very important part of the population politically, and in a different, again, geography. In addition, the book Religion in a Free Market provides wealth of information from the American Religious Identification Survey in 2001, authored by Barry Cosman and Ariella Kesar. So we'll have that information as well, so people can look at these resources and hopefully find the answers to some of the questions that they have.
Yeah, wonderful, and hopefully can maybe get some ideas to spring their own future research from. So thank you so much for this really enlightening conversation, Professor Kesar.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Well, we've just been listening to Chris talking to Ariella Kesar about what Americans believe. I think we can all agree that Americans are pretty keen on religion. One thing they're less keen on, though, perhaps, is Marxism. I apologise for that link. Karl Marx, of course, was one of religion's staunchest critics, famously describing it as opium for the masses. However, his ideas have had a wide-ranging and lasting legacy on the study of religion. It may seem that his ideas are rather out of fashion today, but in my interview with Titus Yelm next week, he tells us that the influence of Marx is still around, although perhaps under different names. So I hope you'll come back next Monday for that interview. And of course, coming up this Wednesday, we have a response to our Kesar interview with our friend Lindsay Askin. Join the conversation in the comments section on the website, on our Facebook page, or on Twitter at ProjectRS. And if you could take the time to give us a rating on iTunes, we'd be much obliged, as that can do a lot to help us bring this podcast to a wider audience. But as always, thanks for listening.